it's kind of very jarring because you're sitting there and you're watching him, you know, in the very small corner of the screen, he's standing over her and you can kind of just see some movement, but the screams you can hear are so intense and the sound of him pulling the tape. He said, "I'm guilty out." He said, "I did whatever. I'm guilty of dragging her across the floor. I obviously hit her." And when the guardie asked, you know, "What would you like to say to the victim?" He said, "Sorry for everything."
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
Serial sex offender Maurice Fitzgerald was jailed this week after he pleaded guilty to a shocking attack on a woman who he bound and gagged with duct tape and dragged down a city laneway. The former jockey had taken a train to Dublin and hunted for a victim in pubs as he carried a bag containing a change of clothing, condoms, and later three rolls of the tape he used to restrain his victim. This week, we are joined by journalist and Crime World researcher Claude Amini, who attended Fitzgerald's sentencing hearing, where he was jailed for 8.5 years. She talks to myself and Niall Donald about Fitzgerald's terrifying history of crimes against women, about his predatory actions in the run-up to his latest attack, and about her observations of the normal-looking 29-year-old, who she says just looked like any other guy. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com.
Do you know, often people would say to you, you know, if you've covered a trial like Graham Dwyer, or, you know, if you've sort of been in court maybe when Larry Murphy was there, you know, people think they're a monster. But actually what's really striking when you come face to face with these people is how ordinary they look and how you could pass them on a street any day of the week. You could sit beside them on the bus and you wouldn't have a clue. And this week, a guy was up in court and Clodagh has gone down for us to be there to observe and to come back and sort of give your feelings on it as well as the facts of this case. But Maurice Fitzgerald, and he's a serial sex offender. Scary guy, this. Yeah. And somebody who could have passed through the courts there almost unnoticed had this case not been covered. So tell me a little bit about him and what you thought of him, and then we'll go into the details of what he did and what he's done previous.
Yeah, so Maurice Fitzgerald is a 29-year-old former jockey. Mm. He formerly trained under Ted Walsh, father of Ruby. He was up in court on Thursday, charged with four different charges. So he was up for false imprisonment, assault causing harm, and he had two charges of possession of a weapon, which were entered null prosequi by the prosecution.
Right.
This guy, you know, you're going into it and you're thinking, ex-jockey, you know, how much damage or how afraid could you be of somebody like that? You know, you're expecting somebody small. And he was, you know, a small enough guy. He walks out, he's well-dressed, well-groomed, the hair has been freshly done. Not an unattractive man, I would say. You are expecting these people to be absolute monsters, hideous monsters from, you know,
that lurk
in dark alleyways. Yeah, but these offenders, they aren't. They're everyday people, and that's how they do what they do.
And when he came into the court, so was there a confidence about him? Was he feeling, did you get the sense? Because courts are open places where members of the public can walk in. And if you're trying to hide anything you've done, it's not the place to be. You know, everything is going to come out. This was, he had pleaded guilty to some of these offences, or he had, there was an null prosequi entered on a few of them, but he pleaded guilty. So in that case, we don't hear the exact details of what went on, but during sentence hearing, you hear a lot of, you know, what happened and a bit of background about the individual. So did he exude a confidence or an arrogance or anything like that?
No, I mean, the first time I'd seen perpetrator in the dock was when I went to the Jerry Hutch trial. Mm. And he walked out with this kind of, not a swagger, but he looked at the audience, he looked around the room, he kind of, you know, had a look at what was going on. But this guy kind of, it was kind of head down, didn't look at the court, was very intent watching. We got to see some CCTV footage from the attack, was intent on watching that, was engaging a lot in keeping an eye on the judge and what was being said. But there was no sort of confidence or presence about him, really. He didn't really look at anyone.
See, of course, he's pleading guilty.
Mm. Yeah.
So you know, when you do see people plead guilty, they can often, they don't want to project confidence. They want to project shame and remorse because it's not been, it's not his first time through the courts, of course, is it? Like we had him in the Sunday World in 2016 for a very similar kind of attack. So what was the like, this is a very random attack, isn't it? It's not like a lot of the sex offenders, it's, you know, people that they know, or family, girlfriends or whatever. But this really is one of those random pick
and
a stranger.
Let's set the scene, because it was the 27th of August 2022. And what happens, and where does this occur?
So it happened in a remote laneway in Dublin city centre. It is, like you said, the middle of August. It's a Saturday. It's a hot, hot day at the end of the summer here in Ireland. He gets on a train in Mallow and he intended to travel to Kilkenny. Now, it's not known why he didn't get off in Kilkenny, whether he had travelled just, you know, bought the ticket because it's cheaper to get there, or whether he had planned to stop there. But anyway, he arrived into Dublin at around 1 o'clock in the day. During that time, he begins visiting a couple of different pubs. He has his a gym bag with him. So in his bag, he's got a change of clothes, his passport, you know, he got some money, and he has two condoms. So from that, the, you know, the judges said there was some intent to stay or whatever, but he had no accommodation booked. He went to a couple of different pubs around the city at about 5:30. So after he'd had a couple of drinks, he went into Deals on Liffey Street and he bought two rolls of duct tape and a claw hammer, as well as a shopping bag to put them into. After this, he took off again and he went to another bar. He was in and out of the bar, going in and out of the smoking area. I assume there was a front to the bar area as well. He got chatting to a woman there who he brought inside and bought a drink for her.
Very normal bar, the duct tape so far.
Very normal. Guy maybe out on the pull, you know, apart from, you know, it seems there was some alcohol taken and he made a decision that he was going to go and maybe go down this path.
And has he been on at this point now to contacting women on the internet, or has that come at a later point?
It seems, though, it wasn't brought up in the sentencing hearing, but from the arraignment, from the notes I read from that, it appeared that he had been in touch with different women on the internet, maybe trying to meet up with them, whether that was through Tinder or Facebook, it hasn't been specified.
So during this kind of drinking session, he's chatting up women in the smoking section, he's chatting up women at the bar, and he's possibly online as well, trying to find somebody to meet.
Yeah, that seems to be his MO for the day. After more drinking, after he finished with that woman, he went to Eurogiant on Abbey Street, which is just at the Lewis stop there, if anyone knows it. And he went in and he bought another roll of duct tape. And when he's in there, he gets chatting to the cashier and they exchange details and they plan to meet up later in the evening. So I assume, you know, she said, I'll meet you when my shift ends. But during that time, he was also on the Lewis, and Gardaí were able to track him via CCTV and via his credit card, his bank card, and through receipts and stuff like that. He'd been on the Lewis and he was seen on CCTV taking a picture of an unknown woman, which then, of course, this image was found on his phone when Gardaí sees that. He met the woman from the shop in another bar. They had about three drinks together. He left the bag of his, you know, his weapons. Yeah. He left that in the pub and went and walked her to her bus. It's at this point at around 11 o'clock, that he meets his victim. Mm. So he's in Temple Bar at this point. He was captured. Without the bag, yeah. Right. He's captured on CCTV at the Norseman pub. And, you know, they're outside, they're seen chatting with one another, they're walking, they seem to be kind of messing. I think at one point he gives her a piggyback. Mm. They leave, they walk along the quays. At this point, she is seen and she's sort of unsteady on her feet, she was described as in the CCTV. They try to flag down a taxi, but they had no success. So at this point, they walk back to the pub where he left his bag and he picks it up, which again, like we said, he has his weapons in it. Mm. They then head on up the road to Meeting House Lane, which is where the incident happens.
How do I know that place? Where is that?
It's not too far from Jervis Street. So just off Mary's Abbey.
They sometimes have gigs and stuff on there.
Busy area, yeah. Remote was not something
and like she is described as a very vulnerable woman. Like that's
absolutely.
I mean, like this is somebody that has diagnosed, I think, with schizophrenia, was that was said. So he's picked on this person that's extremely vulnerable without going into great details of her.
Yeah, it seems like she has, you know, chronic schizophrenia. Even up to now, she remains in a mental health facility after what happened to her. But the two of them went into the laneway at around 11 o'clock. They're then actually picked up on CCTV. So this is a CCTV that we've seen in court. There was like some apartments that were backing out onto this laneway. And again, it was a hot summer's night, so their windows were open. Some of the residents heard the woman shouting, you know, leave me alone, get this off me. And that's when the Ring camera kind of picks it up. So because the Ring camera, it only picks up motion when motion is detected, so it's not continuous. So there was a couple of small clips, but this CCTV was played out to the court, and it's kind of very jarring because you're sitting there and you're watching him, you know, in the very small corner of the screen, he's standing over her. And you can kind of just see some movement, but the screams are, you can hear, are so intense. And the sound of him pulling the tape continuously is being heard. So you can hear him wrapping her up. You know, first of all, he bound her mouth and then her wrists and her ankles. Gardaí said that when they got to the scene, they couldn't even rip the tape off her mouth. They had to get a knife to remove. They just couldn't take it off. But yeah, we see in the CCTV that the attack happening, he's, you know, pulling her underneath the car. We can hear Gardaí sirens in the background, and as he obviously starts to hear them as well, he was intoxicated, so he might not have picked it up on it straight away. We see him dragging her. He's trying to hide her underneath a car. And when the Gardaí car lights come into the shot, that's when he drops her and he starts to run. But of course, he's in a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And he runs just, you know, straight to a dead end is what we see. He has a bit of a jostle with the Gardaí, but they do eventually restrain him.
Right. I mean, at which point they realise they have in their custody a guy who's obviously attempting to do something very serious to a woman. He's bound her up. There's been no sexual assault, obviously, in this case.
I mean, the woman actually tells Gardaí, he didn't rape me, but it was torture. And obviously,
she presumably thought she was going to be.
Exactly. I mean, because there's a good reason that she would have thought that, because... like, he does have a history of something remarkably similar in a court case in 2016.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the guards have arrested him. They realise that they have a sex offender.
Yeah, so they take him to Bridewell Garda Station that night, and he's deemed unfit for interview because obviously he's intoxicated. So, you know, they end up interviewing him the next morning, and during this interview, he does admit that he had hit her. He said, I'm guilty out, which is obviously, you know, quirk phrase. Mm. He said, I did whatever. I'm guilty of dragging her across the floor. I obviously hit her. And when the Gardaí asked, you know, what would you like to say to the victim? He said, sorry for everything. But he had very similar incident that happened in Tralee in 2015. There was very similar MO in that he had duct tape. He'd met her outside a nightclub, again, a vulnerable young woman. She had said that she had lost her friends. She had said in subsequent interviews that she had felt that he was genuinely concerned for her welfare. You know, she was obviously, maybe her phone had died or whatever may have happened, that she had been separated from her friends. And he said to her, he approached her and he was talking to her and he said, you know, there's a party back in my house. Come back with me. You know, you can stay in the spare room. It's fine. And she kind of trusted him in this kind of moment of vulnerability. And afterwards, of course, she had said that she'd felt like such an idiot for trusting him. But at that moment, maybe it was the only person that, you know, was there and seeming to help her. And of course, you know, you try not, especially as a woman, you do try and be trusting, but obviously there is that level of having your guard up around people. But, you know, she did go back to his apartment in Tralee. He was working on a stud farm at the time, so he was living in the area. She went into bed fully clothed or whatever, and he went off to bed, pops back in beside her a couple of, you know, while later, and says, oh, I can't sleep, and, you know, tries it on with her, and she says no, he's not taking no for an answer, and, you know, tries to remove her clothes. At this point, she gets up, gets dressed and leaves, and, you know, she thinks she's safe, that she's away from him. But at this point, she's only a few kilometres down the road, and next of all, she hears footsteps behind her. And she doesn't know it at the time, but it's him again. He threatens her, tells her that he will kill her if she doesn't comply, drags her into a ditch.
And the duct tape is again a feature.
He has duct tape and he has a scissors with him as well this time, so another weapon. he seems to have this kind of thing. Like, he did say to Gardaí that he was into bondage. And before, hours before that second attack that had happened in Tralee in 2015, because of course there was one prior to that as well, he had Googled girl taped and gagged. And he had obviously had an obsession with this. And at this point is when he admitted he was into bondage, but he pulled her into a ditch. And this time, two passers-by, there were two men who were working in a local nightclub in Tralee, actually intervened and called the guards. So, you know, he was at a stage where he, you know, was perhaps he was on top of her. He was in the ditch with her. It's only when Gardaí found him in hiding in the bushes that she realized this is the guy who had tried to attack her earlier in the night as well. So, you know, he was taken into custody. Now, at this time, he was out on bail because 2 years prior, he had, again, there was a woman who was on a night out and she was, you know, going to the bathroom in a car park somewhere in Tipperary. And he just pulled her back, got on top of her. And at this point, he was charged with sexual assault. He pleaded guilty and was given a 4-year suspended sentence. But from this, he was put on the sex offenders register. Right. And obviously from this, again, when the attack happened in Tralee, that 4-year sentence was imposed. So he went into prison for the first time and was only released there in 2021, you know, less than a year before the attack happened. But when Gardaí arrested him the third time for this attack that he was recently sentenced for, they had found on his phone, they'd found that picture of the girl from the Lewis, but they'd also found what they describe as stock images. So obviously they're differentiating this between images that were posed and were consensual, or there was implied consent, there was no violence, as opposed to images that he may have taken of women under duress, but they were women that had been, again, bound and gagged.
So, I mean, he's on the move. Like, he's between, that's three cities we know of that he has attacked women. He's been jailed, by the way, for anybody listening or watching this on YouTube. He did actually get a custodial sentence on Thursday of 8.5 years, but with the 18 months at the end of it suspended. We'll talk about that in a minute about sentencing. But I mean, this guy, and I had actually been alerted to this upcoming sentencing because there is a concern that he's not that well known, and he should be.
No.
And he's somebody who is moving around. He's young. He's clearly, is drink involved each time?
Yes.
All three occasions. While he's not totally organised, he's not totally disorganised. He has his duct tape, he has evidence on his phone that he's obviously attracted to some sort of a bondage thing. And
yeah, like, it's quite rare, those sort of stranger attacks.
Is it
like,
very rare?
Like, you know, very if you rare. Think of people that are that predatory,
yeah.
Like, it's not common. But, I mean, it is particularly scary when you get somebody like that that shows a degree of planning and, you know, an ability to sort of move between places and carry it out. I mean, it's
he's reminding me of, I'm going to call him your guy. But
Paul Moore.
Paul Moore, because there was a picture of Paul Moore shouting into Niall's face at one point. And if he'd hair, it would have been one of those model-y type photographs with the hairbrush. You could just see the ferocity of him coming at you in that picture. But he was a similar sort of a character that was supposed to be banned from drinking because he had these sexual desires seemed to come to
like
the forefront
with drink. Exactly. He was, and again, he was quite a talkative and intelligent person, I think, but he had this absolute impulse control problem. Like, he was out of control, and no matter what sentences he got, how much he was being monitored, he just kept striking again and again. And again, as I said, like, most sexual assaults, they're between people that know each other, family members, you know, partners. So, like, these kind of real predators, like, it's really, really uncommon, and it's very, very it's very hard to hear really stuff like
it
that.
Is,
a woman that is...
It's very good to highlight though, I think, as well.
It is. And a woman that is sort of schizophrenic prey on that. Like, it's not...
Because, you know, the thing is, like, our experience of these people, not that we're up close and personal as such, but just from our work, myself and I would often say there's sort of a lot of them are social misfits. There's something just a little bit uncomfortable about being in their company. A lot of people would say that. So that's why they tend to find and seek out the vulnerable. I'm just thinking the forefront of my mind here is Graham Dwyer, and the kind of victims he went for were very, very vulnerable women. And clearly, Larry Murphy, who has a conviction for horrific sexual assault and who has been named as a suspect in some of the cases of some of the missing women, although there doesn't appear to be any forensic or otherwise evidence, but he is certainly suspected on that. Again, an individual that if you go and you speak to people who'd been in his company, they just say there's just something a little bit off, something a little bit odd about him. And Fitzgerald, that's not to say people are safe from Fitzgerald if he's like that. He's wandering around these pubs in town. He's obviously hunting for somebody until he eventually comes upon somebody who is. And he's like obviously functioning enough to get somebody to go on a date with him after work, after their shift finishes.
Yeah, I mean, it appears like he had had relationships beforehand from going through his social media today. We could see that he appeared to have been had a girlfriend and everything like that before. And obviously, we don't have testimony from people who know him prior to these assaults. You know, it has been said that he had fallen and had, you know, numerous concussions or head injuries, obviously from being a jockey. And
was that given as kind of part of his character?
No, this is from previous court dates. And, you know, there's this link between head injuries and kind of violence and how people's personalities can change so quickly. So obviously we don't know if he was always like this. And I suppose this is it again. As somebody, you know, when you're interested in these kind of things, you kind of want an answer. Well, why are these monsters the way they are? And I think that's a natural thing for everyone to want to know the why so that they can prevent it and stop it happening in the future. But
I mean, yeah, definitely brain injuries can reduce impulse control. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. Like there's a couple of famous cases of NFL players over in America who suffered brain injuries. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these things are said in court and are unqualified.
Yeah.
Like nobody is presenting a brain scan to say this concussions causes this. It could be.
Yeah.
It's easy to say it in mitigation, is it?
Because you want to say something, don't you? Because, you know, obviously, if you're defending this guy, you want him to get as small a sentence as possible.
I mean, I did
speak to somebody who did know him when he was younger, and the kind of character he was a troubled person from a very young age.
Okay.
We actually wrote about him in 2016 after his conviction for the Trudy attack. We spoke to Ted Walsh at the time, who obviously knew nothing about it, said he was horrified to learn of it. Ted Walsh, obviously one of the most famous trainers in Ireland. But at the time we did that, I do remember we got a couple of emails, which we often do from people saying, oh, leave the poor guy alone. He just had a bad night. Yeah, whatever. Right. Like, as you always get this, often, I mean, we've had people commit the most terrible sex crimes and had their mother or sister ring up and say, how dare you do this? So it's just when you get that, you know, you realize that there are people, and it wasn't his family or anything like that, but there are people around sometimes that want to downplay this, keep it out of the media, you know, and just to hear him.
Well, I mean, there's always the kind of, you know, blame it on the woman, isn't there?
There is the whole thing there
that, you know, women often will complain that they get sort of accused because they were drunk or because they weren't looking after themselves properly, that, you know.
Yeah, they feel like they go on trial.
Exactly. I
mean, but it's amazing, like, this guy is only out a number of months, really, is it? Because the attack was 2022 and he was just out in 2021.
It appears like he was only out of prison less than a year when this happened. I mean, even looking back, you know, during mitigation, you know, that was one of the things his defense said, that, you know, he was only a young lad, which is one of the, and he had spent most of his 20s in prison, which isn't an excuse for what he's done, you know. And even at that, when you're saying women can feel like they're on trial for things like this because they were drunk or what was she wearing, that sort of thing. You know, the mitigation again was, well, he was intoxicated. So, you know, which is disgraceful to hear and sad to hear as a woman sitting there as well, and other people who have been victims of sexual assault and whatnot, to hear that, you know, it's not an excuse for her, but it is for him.
Mm-hmm.
But the Judge Nolan, who was sentencing yesterday, you know, was very clear in to saying that, you know, they couldn't jail him preventatively, just in case he committed another crime, but they were.
What did that mean? I'm only reading it because I wasn't there myself, but Judge Martin Nolan, curious comments and
I mean, Judge Martin Nolan and his sentencing has become a huge point of public controversy.
Hasn't it just?
Fairly or unfairly, it is a source of huge public controversy. I mean, you can see it all over social media.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose what he's trying to say there is, you know, he can't jail him. He can only jail him for the crime that's in front of him, as opposed to saying this man, you know, may be a danger in the future when he gets out. He can't put him in prison for 20 years on the basis that this is a dangerous person. He can only convict
him for what's in front of him.
So I suppose that's what he's saying there. I mean, in this occasion, it is a lengthy sentence. You know, some people would
say, what's the maximum?
Well, I mean, false imprisonment is a serious charge, and I'm sure it can go further. I don't know if there's a maximum or sentence for that, but there could have been a further.
He had to take into account his guilty plea.
Yeah.
Which you have to, right?
Yeah.
That's part of it. He imposed a 10-year sentence.
Yeah.
Sorry, not an 8.5.
Well, it was a year and a half.
A year and a half suspended.
Yeah.
So a 10-year sentence, a year and a half suspended. It is actually that is quite a long sentence for a three-time offender. Is it long enough?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's complicated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like,
what else did Judge Nolan say about it? Now, he did discuss about his unhealthy and his criminal obsessions.
Yeah, he did note, obviously, that, you know, while this was a random victim, he clearly had a plan, and he had a violent plan at that. He said, you know, he's prepared to use force to apprehend and take a woman, which, you know, he seems to have... The victim never was able to give a proper statement to the Gardaí because she is still in a mental health facility since the incident. But her father wrote and submitted a victim impact statement to the court, which wasn't read aloud, but obviously that was taken into consideration by the judge. He said that his certain interests and obsessions were, to put them at their mildest, unhealthy and criminal. And taken, obviously, the previous convictions into consideration, he said that he would hope that he wouldn't reoffend, but he couldn't say for certain.
I think it probably brings up, like, what do you do with people like this?
What do you do with people like this?
I mean, so, like, there's
You'd
a couple...
wonder, was the bag ever described, well, of course, there was no... Was it described at any point during the sentence hearing as a rape kit? Was it a rape kit? Is that what he went out with in the morning? A rape kit? He had spare clothes in the bag, and then he put duct tape in it.
No, so he didn't have any weapons with him when in that gym bag. So he went to Dublin with a change of clothes and some condoms, which would suggest, you know, he was maybe going out in the pool.
Or
after having drink.
It could
he
suggest
then went
that
and
he
bought,
had in his mind that he was
that he,
going
yeah.
to cover up, because he could have changed his clothes if there was an attack and used a condom, which wouldn't leave
any DNA.
DNA, well, you know, or he could have thought that. And then there's duct tape in that bag. He's no hotel room booked.
No hotel room booked. It seems like after he had consumed alcohol, you know, it's 4 hours on from when he got to Dublin, that's when he decides he's going to go and buy his silver duct tape and his claw hammer. And whether or not that was his plan all along or not, we don't know. But he certainly, you know, he did have this.
Well, half that
plan.
Bag was packed when he left in the morning with no drink taken.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a change of clothes, but and condoms.
Mm.
There was something in his mind.
Absolutely.
So just I'm talking about, you know, how do you deal with these people?
I mean,
people?
Look, you can have to...
I know your Paul Moore was ordered not to drink alcohol because that was seen as a factor that really, you know, made him...
Lose any impulse control that he had.
Control,
and he was also not allowed to approach random women, which was something that he liked to do, Paul Moore, which was if there was a GA match on or whatever, people were drinking out in the streets at summer... He liked to go up and just start making conversation. So he was, I don't know if that was actually a court order, I can't remember, or he was directed not to do that. But, I mean, it does...
drink with Fitzgerald, his way of meeting a woman or finding a victim, or, you know, he is remembering the next day what happened. He's not discussing a blackout, or it's not
no,
as if he said... Was there evidence of how much he had to drink or how drunk he was?
There doesn't seem to be much evidence of how much he drank. The only time that was mentioned was when he went to the bar with the woman from Eurojoint. They had three drinks together.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, there was no kind of quantity of how much he had drank, although I suppose we can take into consideration the fact that he was ruled unfit to give a statement the night that he got to the Garda station because he was intoxicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the interesting things I thought was that he was ordered to be of good behaviour but he's only for 5 years he supervised post-release.
Yeah.
Which is a strange kind
of thing. Very strange. But he remains on the sex offenders register, no doubt.
But yes. I mean, you know, like, what is the sex offenders register?
And how does it work?
Well, what is it like? Because, I mean, we know what it is, but I mean, it's
supposed to sign on, right? Yes. And then you're supposed to give your address and you're supposed to say if you're moving.
Now, yes.
Let's look at the case of Larry Murphy.
Yeah.
Who wasn't strictly on it because his offence happened before it was set up, but they did kind of put him on a sex offenders register. But the fact is that the sex offenders register is it's a trust with an offender.
Yeah.
You're relying on the offender to tell you the truth.
Yes.
And by nature, offenders and particular sex offenders aren't going to be trustworthy, honest people.
Yeah. And so the sex offenders register, obviously, if there's vetting or anything like that, it kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if a sex offender moves address, he has to within 7 days go to the guards and tell them of his address. And really, that's the only activity he has to do.
He can't, you know what I mean?
There'd be some restrictions.
If they wanted to mix with kids or whatever, if there was those, the Garda vetting is obviously not going to be, sex offenders not going to be Garda vetted.
It is not what you see in the States where you have repeat offenders with ankle bracelets, being monitored in real time. It's just not that.
And there are facilities for members of the public to actually go online to see where sex offenders are living near them.
Yeah.
That has never been something that's here. Or in the UK or in other countries, there is sort of vigilante groups have kind of emerged to out sex offenders. Some of them would be more concentrated on offenders who are trying to groom younger kids and that. But it's a bit of a mess, the whole thing, isn't it?
It is. And of course, there's legislation that's proposed that could change some of this. There is technology that's being discussed to be introduced. I mean, you have to say that the type of people that are like Maurice Fitzgerald are quite a rarity, and that maybe there should be a way of categorising and keeping a track of that kind of really high level predatory behaviour. I mean, you know, but we're not doing it, and it is scary to have sort of a young, presentable, articulate person that obviously has a degree of social skills in terms of mixing. And, you know, he'll be out, obviously, it's, 8.5 years, so he'll be out in 6 years.
And is he in custody?
But he's in custody now, backdated to August.
2020?
Yes, 2022.
No, 2022,
so it's another year off, so he'll be out in 5.
Well, yeah, nearly. Something like that maybe, you know, so in or around that. So it is...
So he'll be 34.
Like, obviously, in this occasion, he's not being convicted of... He's convicted of false imprisonment, not a specific sex offence, though obviously the motive is there and clear.
Mm.
This is it. Like, it's unsettling to hear people that wrong, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when we talk about gangland criminals who maybe commit murder or whatever, like, they have a reason within their own logic, maybe for revenge or something like that. But to hear somebody plan and execute attacks on a random person who suffers from schizophrenia, like, it is quite...
Mm.
And I mean, also, is he, you know, what do we not know about him?
Yeah.
I mean, we have 3 cases where he's been caught. You know, women, the fact of the matter is, who sometimes make decisions when they've drink taken and they don't want to know about it again and they don't complain about it and they don't, you know, there could have been other women that have met with Maurice Fitzgerald that just wanted to park that as something that they didn't want to end up in court about or whatever. I mean, you know, the Rape Crisis Centre will talk about the amount of non-reported sex assaults.
Which would be the majority of them.
The majority of them, exactly. Yeah. So, So tell me, what did you, how was your court experience, Clodagh?
My court experience, well, I've never sat in the criminal courts watching sentencing like that before. I've been to murder trials, I've been to the district
court. Which court was it?
It was in the Central Criminal Court.
It was Court 5, like,
Court 5, yeah. So.
Which is the most chaotic when you...
Yeah. It was very chaotic. So the whole time there was just people going in and out and in and out. And I was like, why is the judge not going, giving out to these people? It was so distracting. And obviously when I'd been in district court, things go so fast.
Yeah.
You know, people are for driving offences or whatever it might be. But in the criminal court, watching people come in with their bags ready to go off to prison, I was like, are they going off to prison with those bags? Yeah. And then I actually seen somebody, a partner, hand the bag and off he went to prison for 24 months for some drug conviction. But no, it was very interesting. With this one, you know, I was afraid. I was like, oh gosh, how am I going to see what's going on with all these people coming in and out? But this, it's just silence, watching what was happening in this case. Yeah.
They lash through some of those mentioned dates and that. Like,
it can be so chaotic and it can be difficult to... I was trying to tell Clodagh where to sit and what to do and telling her not to be afraid to ask people if she didn't know what was going on and all the rest of it. Yeah. Because courts are just quite chaotic. And half the time you're sitting there going, what just happened?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
The amount of people turn up in tracksuits, I always think, is would you not just put on the L... tin of fruit
well,
for
I
the
have
day.
To say, when March 2020 happened and the courts obviously, like everything else, went a bit chaotic with COVID and everything, and then they're back. I mean, there are still quite a few people who are before the courts at the moment going around with face masks up to here because they're the best invention ever. Yeah. Nobody can photograph them coming in or out. Yeah. And when they're inside the court where they cannot be photographed, they have the face masks underneath here like a kind of a slingshot.
Yeah.
Because, but look, they can be crazy, but it was a really good, interesting case to send you down on and to hear your thoughts on it, like, as well. I mean, on a personal level.
Mm.
What was it?
I mean, as on a personal level, I'm sitting there and it's, you know, he had this, as Nicola has taught me very much about, is the prison glow. Yeah. You know, they're toned, they're working out, they're fresh, the fresh haircut, all that jazz. And what was most interesting to me was the fact that I was like, this guy is the exact same age as me. So I'm going to go through life now. Like, this is something I'm never going to forget, you know? And again, being kind of a woman watching this and taking this in and obviously having experienced watching women go on trial in the past for things that have happened to them, it was kind of, I was delighted to see that he got such a sentence. You know, I was nervous because it was originally Court 22. It was moved down to Judge Nolan, and obviously he has been very controversial recently in some of the sentences. So I was kind of like very interested to see what was going to happen because I did see him give out suspended sentences for, you know, very various violent crimes and stuff throughout the morning. But no, it was, you know, this guy...
You spend the rest of your life now, all your mates are going to think you're completely over the top, totally paranoid, for goodness sake, that's that job that's done that to you. But you'd be saying to them, make sure that you stay together. Don't be getting a taxi home on your own.
Yeah.
You know?
But and it's also, like what they always say, is it the banal face of evil? The face of evil is banal and unexciting. Like, you don't...
That's it. You could have sat on that train with him on the way up from Cork. He's from Buttevant originally, isn't he?
Yes.
And you wouldn't have had a clue. You could have had just a normal chat with him and...
Yeah, you're probably eyeing some guy further down that looks a bit dodgy, but this is the banal face of evil is the guy, you know?
Exactly. So just given that we mentioned him, Graham Dwyer, let me just tell you about Graham Dwyer... Because for the last few kind of, like, how long has this gone on now? This has gone on and on, this appeal. But there's been this sort of sense from the public that is Graham Dwyer going to walk free? He's appealing. He's taking this case that his conviction shouldn't be upheld. And there was all sorts of complicated reasons around his phone, which I've actually done podcasts on, and I still don't quite try.
But I sometimes... I have an ability to sound
much better.
I have an ability to sound like I know what I'm talking about, even if I don't.
He's a typical journalist. Yeah. He knows a little bit about lots of things, but not a lot about anything.
No, yeah, a little bit. You know, you repeat in different ways. Ad nauseum. So, well, it's basically to do with the retention of the data of his phone, which was a big part of Graham Dwyer's conviction. His phone contact with Elaine O'Hara's murder victim. And it eventually went to the European courts, who said the Gardaí aren't allowed, just retain whatever data they want. The that went back to the Supreme Court, who verified that decision effectively, and they sent it back then to the appeal courts. But the appeal court has judged that the conviction didn't solely rely on the mobile phone. There was a chain of circumstantial evidence, effectively, and that the conviction is safe to stand. That was a feature of it, but it wasn't the sole determining factor. It's not dissimilar to the Mr. Moonlight case where...
Patrick Quirk, we were talking about last week, exactly. Yes. Where there is, you know, as Eamon described, that all these threads that create a rope.
Yes.
And just two of them were sent on to the Supreme Court. One of them has come back.
Yeah, so it is an important decision in the higher courts about the retention of data. But whether it, you know, these things aren't automatically retrospectively applied to cases. The cases have been held, they're in front of a jury. There's a load of evidence, and it doesn't automatically mean things are thrown out. So, I mean, I believe Graeme Dwyer can now appeal again to the Supreme Court. Is that correct?
And I don't know. Can he go again to the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, the overall conviction for murder.
There hasn't been, that he can go to the Supreme Court with that. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been any indication about that. So
no.
Just for the moment.
No, I mean, of course,
he's lost this appeal.
Yeah, and then he would have a period of time to appeal to the higher court.
Because he doesn't bore you to death about data, because he loves a bit of data.
Explaining that, I'm thinking, oh,
can you see myself in Kyoto going like this as I
I know you're pretending to. It's fascinating. No, I'm actually sitting there thinking, God, I'm glad I'm getting this wrong now.
Yeah, you're grand. No, I did ask you to explain. But what I was going to say was, on a more serious note, in the case of Graeme Dwyer and the murder of Elaine O'Hara. So Elaine O'Hara's body was a long time lying in the open before she was found, and actually, like, her complete remains were never found. And what was sort of unique about the case against Graeme Dwyer was, in bringing it, the state had no cause of death. They mm-hmm. had no idea how she actually died. So that was going to be a problem for them. So they did have to bring in all this circumstantial evidence, and a lot of it was on phones, some of it was on computers. But, you know, there was a lot of evidence that he was going on the internet to look up the kind of things he wanted to do to women. And, you know, he was what they call interested in pikerism, which was stabbing a woman while having that. That's what aroused him, basically. And he had been somebody who was increasing his sort of acting out his fantasies all the time, and there was evidence that was getting, you know, it was building to something, which the state said was the murder of Elaine O'Hara. But just when you see Maurice Fitzgerald also, you know, going online to look, obviously, at what he then
carried out to a degree anyway.
To a degree.
Yeah.
There's certain, like, similarities. There's sort of some sort of a bondage situation with the duct tape and that. But, I mean, Niall, you're right. I mean, these are the kind of the guys that are at the highest level of probably of danger to women, to random women, to women who are walking down the street or people who are out for a drink in a bar, because there can be a lot of hysteria around this.
Yeah.
You know, with women feeling very afraid, which women shouldn't feel very afraid. You know, you're not really going to be, the likelihood of you being attacked by a random stranger hiding in a bush is really small. Yeah. You know what I mean? In this country, gun crime against individuals involved in organized criminal activities is far more likely to happen than
you're not likely to be stopped on the street and shot or attacked. And that's some reason why we're doing a podcast on Maurice Fitzgerald and Graeme Dwyer became so notorious, is because these things are really quite rare.
Mm-hmm.
But Graeme Dwyer, again, ultra normal, like beyond normal, you know, like model aeroplanes, was an architect, a boring house husband.
How many kids,
I mean, that's partly, I think, some of the reason why it became so notorious, because it's so unusual and unheard of, you know. So there are a small number of men that are of that real predatory nature.
And it's up to, you know, it's up to the, I suppose, the sentencing is one element of it. I do think the media has a role.
They do.
You know, in and this underworld can be slagged off for using pictures of people and all the rest of it. But in the end of the day, it's good for people to look at that face of Maura Fitzgerald women, and to know what he looks like. I mean, it's not going to be embedded in your brain. I don't want people to be having nightmares about him, but it's good to keep sort of abreast of who these men are, and absolutely, just so as anybody could report them if they're acting suspiciously as well.
I mean,
he's going to be out in 5 years. That's not that long.
I mean, we had a case recently of a very notorious killer and sex offender who reappeared on Tinder after he got out with just a slightly different name.
Yeah.
And that's quite common. You know, this is where these people end up. So there is a value for these people to be named, shamed and pictured.
So thanks a million for covering that,
no,
Clodagh, and for your great reportage of what happened in court. We maybe
traumatize me again.
Traumatize
me
again further next week. Yeah. So you can just end up like really freaking out your mates.
Yeah. Brilliant. Perfect.
Anthonelle Snile, are we?
No, that's good? All good.
So this week is the no. Sex, I mean,
there have been other developments. I mean, I think there was an interesting development with the Criminal Assets Bureau and the Gardaí, and the Spanish police targeting Barry Young's crime gang in Spain.
Very interesting development, because that's exactly what needs to be happening.
Yeah, and you know, so we'll have more in the paper this weekend about that. So there have been further developments, but...
And you and I'll talk about that maybe next week, or myself and Eamon will talk about that further, because that is a really big thing that Europe needs to... I would think there have been calls for it by people way sort of more important to us than I am, but I think there has to be a sort of a Europol of CAB working together, because these criminals... They are not just keeping their money in one country. They're transferring them. They've assets all over the world. And the only real way you get to them next is to go for them in cooperation with them, with other assets recovery agencies. Okay, so thanks a million.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Clodagh Meaney. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review, or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.